It's time for the Rink Rats. With your hosts, Ryan the Hockey Guy Wallace and Jesse Granger.
Rink Rats, Ryan the Hockey Guy, Jesse Granger. The Athletic, Jesse Granger. Not the Athletic Jesse Granger, but the guy that writes for The Athletic. Fairly certain you make over $35,000 a year.
That's safe to say.
Okay. I'm not asking you to divulge that information. I'm just saying it's safe to assume that when you write for The Athletic, one of the leaders in all media across the board in the nation, you probably make more than $35,000 a year.
That is safe to assume.
Safe to assume that you're also media, not just a person also.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Now that we cleared that up, it's... I don't know if you... I'll explain it to you after. It's fine. Not a big deal. Okay. But we are here. This is the second episode in 2 weeks, which is pretty good for us.
Yeah.
With our schedule being as crazy and as ridiculous as it is. But Jesse is here. I'm here, sort of. We're going to get into some things. We're going to talk about some stuff. Most notably, and I think the first thing that we can probably start off with, is Brandon Peary. The time is nigh for Brandon Peary to be a top six forward for the Vegas Golden Knights for at least the next 3 games.
Yeah, and hopefully for the Golden Knights, it goes as well as his last little 3-game stint did. Obviously, different circumstances. That was at the end of the year when they had already clinched the playoff spot. But the last time this team brought him up and put him in a top six role, he scored a bunch of goals.
Now, I think he'll be fine. Playing with Alex Tuch, playing with Paul Stastny, Peary doesn't have to worry about defense too much. He doesn't have to worry about creating his own chances or anything like that. You're going to have Alex Tuch do a lot of the creating. You'll have Paul Stastny do a lot of the creating. It's clear that those two players have found a little bit of chemistry since Paul Stastny has been inserted back into the lineup. Brandon Peary, just get open, dude.
Yeah.
Literally, your only job in the offensive zone is to get open.
Find the good ice. Find soft spots in the coverage and fired at the net. And that's what he's good at. I mean, that's if you're looking for a guy to do that, I mean, he is the guy. I think Brooks Masek would have been another good choice, but either of those guys, that is their role.
Yeah, Bischoff asked me, I think the day after the Columbus game, if I could see there being a call-up. And I'm going to pat myself on the back because I made the obvious choice in going with Brandon Peary, a guy that has played in the NHL before, a guy that scored 20 goals at the NHL level before, and a guy that Gerard Gallant is very familiar with. And I said it was only if Pacioretty's going to be out for an extended period of time, 3 games. It's extended, I suppose. But I guess the main thing is with Peary, his shot is really good. He plays a very similar style to Max Pacioretty, so for me it was kind of a no-brainer. But what is it about Brooks Masek? And I'm going to talk to Rocky Thompson today. And what is it about Brooks Masek and his game specifically that makes you think he might have also been a good fit here?
Well, I think he's the same player as Brandon Peary. I think they're both kind of poor man's Max Pacioretty. He's got a great release. When I was in Chicago a few weeks back when I got to talk to Rocky Thompson and all those guys down there, and I asked him basically we literally didn't know Brooks Masek was a person 6 months ago, and now he's leading the AHL in goals. Like, what the hell's going on? And
yeah.
I got to do that story on him, and basically he was in Germany and he was lighting it up over there, and what they told me is, why does he score? Quick release.
Yeah.
He doesn't mess around with the puck. You give him the puck, he shoots it quickly. He surprises goalies that aren't expecting the release to be as fast as it is, and he puts it in good spots. He's got, obviously, good accuracy shooting, which is basically, I'm basically describing Max Pacioretty.
Sure.
Obviously, he's not Max Pacioretty's level. He's doing this in the AHL, but I think Peary or Masek would have been a good choice. I think they can both fill in that role for a limited amount of time. You don't want Peary being your second line winger for months. But
so let's, I guess, kind of get to the time frame. We know Pacioretty was placed on IR retroactive to Monday, so he's going to miss. We're recording this on Thursday, so he's going to miss tonight's game. He's going to miss the 2 games over the weekend. Obviously, there's no games over those 3 days, the day before Christmas, Christmas, and the day after Christmas. So he's eligible to return, assuming he's healthy, assuming he's good to go, for that Thursday game against the Colorado Avalanche. Do we see Max Pacioretty then?
Probably not.
Yeah. Do you think it's longer than a week
injury? I mean, we don't know anything about this, so, like, we're completely speculating, but he appeared hurt. Like, this isn't like, oh, a puck hit me in the leg and it hurt. Like, it looked like he strained something.
Yeah.
It looked like he overextended, stretched his legs out a little too far when his skate hit the other guy's skate. I don't even remember who it was now.
That doesn't matter.
But it looked, yeah, I mean, this is just purely me guessing, but I would say, yeah, he probably misses more than the 7 days. But I don't think, at the same time, I don't think this is like, you need surgery out for the season type injury either.
Sure. So Colin Miller is not going to play in Thursday's game. Again, we're recording this on a Thursday. It'll be done on a Friday. So no Colin Miller. First game that he has missed for the Golden Knights in their existence.
Yep.
That's insane.
We are now down to one player who has played in every Golden Knights game in history.
William Karlsson.
Yes.
I didn't even need to look that up.
He is the only player that has played in every single Golden Knights game in history.
Ah, what a bum.
Yeah.
Right? He's having a horrible season, that William Karlsson.
Yeah, he just leads the team in goals. He's three behind his pace from last year.
Okay, listen. But he's not that far off of his pace. Like,
yeah, it's like I think three goals.
Three or four goals. Yeah. And again, it's perception, it's expectations, right?
Yes.
Like, it completely changes everything. If at this time last year William Karlsson had this number of goals, oh my God, it's a breakout year for
the guy. He's amazing, yeah.
And now he scored 43 and he's only got, 12 or 13?
13.
13. So it's just not good enough.
And when we say on pace, he's not on pace to score 43. He's only on pace to score, like, not even 30 right now. But at this point in the season last year, because he obviously got hot, like, right around this time.
Well, that's the thing that you have to remember is that William Karlsson had these stretches last year where he would score 6 or 7 goals in, like, 3 or 4 games.
Yeah.
It wasn't that he was just consistently if he didn't score in one game, he'd score in the next game. If he didn't score in the next game, he wasn't consistent from a game-to-game basis. But mm-hmm. when he got hot, he got really, really hot, and there weren't a ton of stretches between those hot streaks.
Yeah, and Karlsson is also getting a lot more assists than he did last year. His goals are down, clearly.
Yeah.
But his points are almost at the same mark, which obviously means he's getting a ton more assists. And he's still probably their best penalty killer. I mean, there's different roles on the penalty kill. There's defensemen, obviously, that are clearing out in front of the net. Then you've got the guy that chases everyone around inside the zone. Karlsson's role on that penalty kill is make life difficult for them entering the zone. Don't let them gain the line very easily. And he is a nightmare out there, like patrolling the blue line, forcing them to curl back into their own zone, not being able to get possession inside the blue line. Like, he is impossible to deal with.
You know, it's funny because we get so consumed with numbers.
Yes.
And I say we as media, but I think fans get so consumed by numbers that
they
fail to really appreciate what a player can do in totality, right? And Riley Smith is a guy that kind of comes to mind for me. Yes, it's easy and it's fun to make a joke about Riley Smith missing wide open nets. Like, it's fun to do that. It's easy to do that. I understand that. But when I watch Riley Smith on the forecheck, it is an absolute joy. The guy is 100% relentless. And I've talked on the Insider Show about how difficult it is to forecheck well, because you're going 100 miles an hour. And there's no payoff that you are guaranteed, right? Like, you go and you exert all this energy, and there's no guarantee that you're going to be able to close the gap and make a play and turn it into something.
Mm-hmm.
But every single time he gets in on a man in the zone, he is relentless. And those are aspects of the game that get completely lost because, you know, he missed an empty net, right? Like, and I just,
yep.
if anything is going to come of this podcast, it's going to be pointing out where guys really excel, maybe away from the puck.
Yeah, forechecking is such a thankless job because 90% of the time, you bust your ass. It's like the most exhausting thing you can do as a player is forecheck. That's why so many star players don't forecheck, because I'm not wasting my time with that. 90% of the time, you bust your ass, you're exhausted, you waste your entire shift chasing this guy around, and then a forward makes himself available, he makes an easy pass to him, and you just did that for no reason. Then the other 10% of the time that it actually does work, and mm-hmm. you create a turnover or you steal the puck from him, it ends up getting into somebody else's hands, and then they score, and then that's the highlight everyone watches, and that's the guy that everyone cheers for.
Yeah.
So you did all this work. Most of the time, you don't get anything out of it. Then when you finally do, it's not you who gets the credit most of the time. Now, sometimes there are occasions where a guy will steal a puck. Carlson,
for sure.
And his between-the-legs goal, that was because he was putting pressure on the defenseman. But guys like that are the ones that the coaches like the most.
Well, and I always find it really funny because throughout a game, as I'm kind of updating on Twitter and stuff like that, I'll find one or two situations where a play like that kind of blows me away, right? Like when I watch Alex Tuch.
Yeah.
50-50 pucks aren't 50-50 pucks with Alex Tuch.
They're 70-30 for him.
Easy.
Yeah.
Easy. And that's like that number to me is only going to get better.
Yeah.
Right? Like Alex Tuch in his prime is probably going to be like 80 to 85% of the time, if it's a 50-50 puck, he's coming out with it.
Yeah, because he's got the reach, he's got the speed, and he's only gaining knowledge. I mean, like little things like the angle to position your stick at, or when to stick lift the opponent, when to tie their stick up, where to put your skate when you're hitting the boards with the guy, like little things like that, he's only going to get better.
And the funny thing to me is you had the article about Alex Tuch and how much he learned from Paul Stastny.
Mm-hmm.
And that was in the press box. I mean, how much better is Alex Tuch going to get playing alongside Paul Stastny? Having the benefit of going out there and having him be your regular line mate, you get to bounce ideas off of him during a game. You get to kind of see, well, what were you thinking in this situation? What should I have done in that situation? And then coming to the bench and talking about it. I mean, I'm very interested to see how good Alex Tuch can be with Paul Stastny in his ear all the time now.
It's going to be great. And that's a great transition to, finally, we have Paul Stastny back.
We talked really briefly before we started the podcast about what we want to talk about. Paul Stastny was one of the main topics. Is this guy human? Honestly, is he human?
Before the first game he played, I tweeted out to, like, basically as a, like, buffer, like, to caution fans, like, look, don't jump on Paul Stastny if he's not great, because this is a guy who has played 3 games in the last, I think, 250 days.
Yeah.
It's not just the 3 months that he missed when he was injured, because he had the entire offseason before that. He hasn't played hockey regularly in almost a year.
Yeah.
When you go back all the way to last playoffs. And this is a guy that his game is so reliant on him seeing things happening.
Yeah.
That's where Paul Stastny excels, is he sees things before other players do. He's a very intellectual guy. He's not faster. He's not stronger. He doesn't have a better shot. He doesn't have better hands than most people. It's his mind.
Yeah.
And usually for a guy who relies on his mind and seeing the game, it's going to take him a lot longer to get back into the swing of things than someone who relies on pure speed. Connor McDavid, misses a year. He's going to come back. I'm still faster than everyone.
Well, sure.
Paul Stastny has come in, and it's like he didn't miss any time at all.
I mean, he's been fantastic. He's in the right place at the right time all the time, seemingly all the time. His defensive game is everything that it was cracked up to be. He's been very good. And he's poised and just making plays and drawing cover. I think it helps to play with Alex Tuch because he provides you so much time and space. But I think it's interesting, right? Because Paul Stastny for 3 games to start the season didn't have a goal, didn't have an assist, didn't have any points. And there was starting to be frustration at the beginning of the year. Then he gets hurt. He comes back, has a goal and an assist in the New York game, the Ranger game, and all is well with Paul Stastny. And I think all is well with Paul Stastny. And it's so funny to me, the dichotomy between Stastny and Pacioretty. All right? Because Pacioretty's game isn't to be the setup guy. It isn't to be the guy that has the puck all the time. Pacioretty's game is simply to be in the right place at the right time so that he can score goals. Pacioretty, before he gets injured, is scoring goals at a pretty good clip. Now, we've gone back. Ken from Sinbin has pulled the numbers multiple times when it comes to Pacioretty. He is very, very good in October. He's not great in October, very good in November, not great in December, and then he's really, really good the rest of the year. Those are his career numbers. And it was that trajectory for Vegas early on in this season. But it's so funny to me because Paul Stastny is the type of player that always has the puck on his stick. He's always moving, always trying to create lanes, always trying to create angles. And I think the optics of that make it appear as though Paul Stastny is better or acclimating better or fitting in better on this team.
Yeah.
Where the optics for Max Pacioretty are...
I
never see him with the puck. He isn't first man in. He isn't first man on pressure. He isn't this. He isn't that. And that's not his role. It's not his job. Mm-hmm. So I want to take like a minute right now in praising Paul Stastny because I think he deserves it. Understanding what the roles are for certain players. You don't bring in Max Pacioretty to this team to be the guy that's going to lead your forecheck. You don't bring in Max Pacioretty to be the setup guy. He needs to be the one receiving the passes. And when he's playing with line mates that can get him the puck, he can score goals.
Yeah, it's been happening with him and Tuck.
No, absolutely. And that's the thing that I want to say. I know that there's been a little bit of controversy surrounding Max Pacioretty and his fit on this team, and everyone wants to talk about, well, he hasn't been very good. And I understand that to a degree, but you have to realize what it is you're getting in Max Pacioretty. He's not the same type of player as an Oscar Lindberg, right? Where you can throw him in different situations. You can make sure that he's going to have the puck. He's going to make plays. He's going to do these things. Yes, he can do that, but that's not his biggest strength. And you want him to be worried about one thing and one thing only. That's finding the ice to get his shot off.
He's also not the same player as Oscar Lindberg because he's good at hockey.
Well, I agree with that statement. And again, the only point that I'm trying to make here is Paul Stastny's optics make it appear as if he's fit in with this team
because he
always has the puck. He's always creating, always looking, always doing something. Max Pacioretty doesn't have the puck for a whole lot of time when he's on the ice. But that doesn't mean that he's not good. Mm-hmm. It just means that he's playing to his strengths and doing what the coaching staff wants him to do. That's get open and get shots on goal.
Yeah, and I think this second line is cursed. But if we ever get if we ever get to see this second line, how it's supposed to be, well, I guess it was technically supposed to be with Holla, but I always thought Tuck should have been on the second line anyways. But the way I thought it should have been, I guess, from the beginning of the season, which is Stastny, Pacioretty, and Tuck. If we ever get to see that for an extended period of time, I think it's going to be one of the better second lines in the NHL. They just haven't been able to, and I think that's also affected, like that's led to people thinking Pacioretty's not playing well, or even people were saying Stastny's not fitting in well, even though he didn't even play. I think
there was somebody on Twitter that was like, I mean, when Stastny gets healthy, like who would you scratch? Carpenter or Lindberg or Nosek or like who would you even take out of the lineup? He's got 0 goals in 3 games. I was like, any of them.
It's Paul literally, freaking Stastny.
Literally any of those 3 players. And then like I listed off their production in like 24 and 28 games, and I'm like, come on, man.
Yeah,
let's be real.
I mean, Paul Stastny is going to be one of the better players on this team down the stretch. Like, if the Golden Knights want to make a run in the playoffs, mm-hmm. they need Paul Stastny to be one of the best players on this team.
Well, I think they need Paul Stastny and Max Pacioretty to be two of the best players on this team. And it was funny because in the Ranger game, I don't remember who it was that tweeted it out, but it might have been Travis Yost, but he was just like, man, Vegas really has 2 lines that can make it look easy. Mm-hmm. He was referring to the top line and the Pacioretty, Stastny, and Tuck line, and that's 100% accurate. We've only seen it for like 2 games.
Yeah, they just can't. That second line just cannot stay healthy.
So I want to jump back to something that you said because I thought it was pretty funny. You mentioned that you wanted it to be Pacioretty, Stastny, and Tuck from day one. I was along those same lines. I think Tuck makes just kind of pulls something different out of Stastny and Pacioretty that Holla didn't mm-hmm. when he was playing with them.
I think Tuck's just better player because I think
I
Tuck
agree.
Might be the best forward on the team.
I agree with that, but I guess the question is, if that's the case and you've seen that Alex Tuck can make Cody Eakin better, does it make more sense when Eric Holla is healthy, to give that a go, to give it a shot, see what may come of it, and you know you're going to get some production from Alex Tuck and Cody Eakin just because it's Alex Tuck.
Yeah, and like we had these arguments over the summer when we were looking at all these players and trying to put the line, and it's like it comes back to that same philosophy difference of, do you want the two best lines you can possibly make?
Yep.
Or would you rather spread the wealth a little bit and have a better third line but a slightly weaker second line? I want two lines that can make it easy, like you said. I want Tuck, Pacioretty, and Stastny to be a dominant line. I'd rather have two dominant, really good lines when they're both clicking that terrify teams,
yeah,
rather than three, well, one really good line and then two, like, good lines, but yeah, not terrifying lines.
So, do we see Eric Halla before the end of the season? Have we talked about that at all yet or no?
We did.
The update?
Yeah, we did last podcast, I think.
So, I don't know. I don't remember if we did or not, but it was reported on, was it the New Jersey game? It was the New Jersey game, right?
It was the game that Pacioretty was out.
Yep, so that was the New Jersey game. So it was reported by Dave Shane that Eric Halla did have surgery. On his knee. It was not an ACL. George McPhee made that very clear. Not an ACL. And that it's an atypical injury for hockey. So the rehab, the timetable is atypical, meaning the Golden Knights really don't know how long Eric Halla is going to be out. So the question, and we talked about it, I think, a little bit, is the trade deadline. What does George McPhee do at the trade deadline? Do you believe Eric Halla will be on the Golden Knights contributing at some point before the end of this year?
I don't know.
Yeah.
If they don't know, how do I know? And I don't even know what's going on. Like, they know way more than I do, and they still don't even know. So, I mean, I'm not going to pretend to, like, have inside information that, like, I honestly don't know if Eric Halla is going to play or not. I mean, it'd be great if he does. I think it's not worth trying to bring him back, like, too early. And I spoke with Gerard Gallant today, actually, after practice, and I asked him, like, have you been surprised at how fast Paul Stastny has just hit the ground running and didn't miss a beat? And Gallant said something that was interesting. He said, well, first off, that's because he worked really hard and he did a good job of keeping himself in shape. But he's like, I want to credit our coaching staff and our medical staff for not rushing players back too soon. They gave him plenty of time to be ready and to make sure he was back. So thinking along those lines, they should do the same thing with Halla. So maybe if he's 90% and he could play in the playoffs, it's like, yeah, let's just wait for next year and, like, get him back to 100% of Eric Halla. So I don't know if he's going to play, but I don't think this team's going to rush him back.
I don't think that they should rush him back because, again, you if you're going to put him into the lineup, you want it to be a Paul Stastny-like situation where he comes back in and hits the ground running. You don't want him to have to play catch-up. Now, granted, there will be a little bit of rust given the length of time, whenever that is, that Eric Halla comes back in the lineup. But you certainly want him to contribute when he's in the lineup, right? Like, that's the whole point of bringing him back.
Yeah.
And then what can Halla do with that third line? Because if you've got Cody Eakin as your third line center, presumably you've got Eric Halla on the wing. What's the best case scenario for that second wing?
I'd prefer Nosek over Carpenter.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if Gerard Gallant would, though, because Gerard Gallant loves Ryan Carpenter. He loves him.
Yeah, I know.
I don't know why. I don't not like Carpenter. I think Carpenter's a decent player, and but he's definitely like a replaceable guy. Like, he doesn't do anything that, like, you can't replace with just some other person. It's just strange that Carpenter, like, is constantly, like, okay, everyone paints me as the anti-Reeves guy. They scratched Reeves the other night.
You're not the anti-Reeves guy.
Yeah, but that's what everybody says I am. Everybody thinks I hate Ryan Reeves, even though I've written, like, five positive stories in a row on him. But the other night, they scratched Ryan Reeves.
Yep.
And I'm like, how could you scratch Ryan Reeves over a guy like Ryan Carpenter, who, like, Reeves has clearly been better than Ryan Carpenter this year.
No, I agree.
But yet they chose to, that's my point. Like, he'll scratch Nosek, he'll scratch Reeves, he'll scratch Pacioretty over Ryan Carpenter, who's not producing at all. Like at like, look at his stats
He scored a goal recently.
Yeah, you're waiting, open net.
You're waiting for the 7 goals in 6 games Ryan Carpenter that
he had last year.
Showed up once. Yeah.
Yeah, and since that point, if you take that out of it and just look since that point, he scored like 3 goals in like 85 games or something. Like an impossible amount. Like how can you be that unproductive? He's not terrible. Like very rarely,
he's a serviceable player.
Yeah, very rarely do I am I watching a game and I think, oh man, what an awful play by Carpenter, like that led to a goal. He almost never does that, and that's why Gerard Gallant likes him. But like, I just don't get why he is so. He is above a lot of players on Gerard Gallant's depth chart that in my personal depth chart he wouldn't be above, like Ryan Reeves, for example.
Let's talk about the other winger on the fourth line. Will Carrier.
Been great.
Been fantastic.
Yeah. More than just hitting people.
I remember at the beginning of the year, maybe it's first week of the year, you and I were talking about Will Carrier, and I'm like, oh my God, he did something in practice, right? And I'm like, that kid's got hands. And you're like, yeah, so did everybody in junior. And I'm like, no, seriously, he's got hands. Like, I've seen him do things that if he could just do it in a game situation, he can put some pucks in the net. And lo and behold, he's doing things, the right things, at the right time in games and making plays. I mean, the goal that he scored on Henrik Lundqvist, it is not easy to outweight a goaltender like Henrik Lundqvist.
Yes.
And that shot was beautiful.
It was. And Gerard Gallant said it during the last homestand, so before they went on the road, he said, Carrier used to, as soon as he gets to the blue line, dump it deep.
Yeah.
Every single time, that's what he does. And now he's not anymore. He's actually looking for offense, and then he's getting the offense, and he's getting production. It's making him more confident. It's making him try more things, not dumping it in, and all of a sudden, he's a different-looking player.
He's been fantastic. I really like the speed that he brings. I like that he draws a lot of penalties. He takes his fair share, too, but he does draw a lot. You want that from a guy that's going to play fourth line minutes, that's going to give you that energy. Mm-hmm. And now he's putting the puck in the net, and confidence goes a long way. He's got 7 goals on the year. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility. He only needs 3, right, to hit double digits, but I'm penciling him in as like a 12 goal guy maybe.
Yeah.
Right. And you get that from your fourth line. Holy crap. That's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, that's the one thing that this team will never like. That is probably the brightest spot on this team.
Yeah.
Is the fourth line. You've got Belmar, who does everything right. Reeves, who's scoring more than he's ever scored in his life. Carrier, who's doing the same thing. They always play in the offensive zone. If you can send your fourth line out there and you're getting goals, you're getting offensive zone pressure, and you're getting penalties drawn, that's the dream scenario.
And the thing about it, too, is Gerard Gallant doesn't really care about matching them up against anybody, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he made a conscious decision to put that line out for the majority of shifts against the Alex Ovechkin line in the Washington Capitals game.
Well, the Tom Wilson line.
Okay, the Tom Wilson line. But still,
there's a reason that they were out there.
No. I agree with you 100%. But you want to send that message, right? Mm-hmm. That physicality message. And we're not going to get into the particulars of the hit or anything like that. But what I find interesting in that is you could put Reeves on a line with Marchessault and Carlson if you are worried about the fourth line getting overmatched with Wilson and Ovechkin and Kuznetsov, but he wasn't. Like, Gerard Gallant isn't afraid to put that line out against top lines in the NHL. And I think that's the thing that's the point I'm trying to make is he's not afraid that line is going to get overmatched by the best players in the league. And that says something about how good they've been this year.
Yeah, no, they've been the most consistent thing on this team, from goaltending to defense to the top line to the second line has been a mess because of all the injuries to the power play. The penalty kill's been really good, and the fourth line have been really good all year with pretty much no exceptions.
So Malcolm Subban played a game. The microphone.
Yeah, I just hit it. You're probably going to hear that. It's like, ba-boom.
It doesn't matter. If they didn't hear it, they're going to know that you hit the microphone like an amateur. So it's good.
I'm not a radio guy.
I know you're not. It's funny. Anyway, Malcolm Subban played a game.
He did.
He was fantastic.
He was, again.
again fantastic. Yeah. And I drew parallels between the game in Columbus and the game in Calgary. Malcolm Subban was great in both games.
Yes. The game that they lost 7-2, for those that aren't
was
sure.
Great.
Malcolm Subban was great in that game.
Gerard Gallant said after the Columbus game that Malcolm Subban was the best player on the ice for the Golden Knights. As has been the case, I think, for every single game that Malcolm Subban has played.
Yeah, because it damn sure isn't the forwards in every game Malcolm Subban's played in. The forwards that have scored 6 goals in 5 games.
You're the goalie.
6 goals in 5 games.
How many NHL goalies would win 2 out of those 5 games if they only get 6 goals in those 5 games?
And you look at who the opposing teams that Malcolm Subban's having to shut down.
Yeah.
You got Calgary, who's are they first in the West, or did
they're right there.
Yeah, so they're first in the Pacific, but they're one of the top teams in the West. Nashville, the other top team in the West.
Yep.
Pittsburgh Penguins. Sidney Crosby, Malkin.
They're on the outside looking in, but let's be real, they're pacing themselves.
And they've got unreal scoring power.
Yes.
Who's the four? Oh, Boston.
Mm-hmm.
One of the top teams in the East.
And it was before Boston got decimated by injuries.
Yeah, and I think they were second in the East when the Golden Knights played them in Boston. And Columbus, which was the toughest game on that last road trip.
The last game of the road trip on a back-to-back, where the team in front of you, is being the Golden Knights, are not going to have the legs that they had earlier on in the trip.
Yeah, and it's the toughest game. So yep. Malcolm Subban has been put in pretty much the toughest situations possible and then given no goal support and then blamed for losses by the fan base, not by the – I'm not saying the team blamed him, but
so
the majority of the fan
the
base
The funniest
blamed him.
Narrative, I think, coming out of the game in Columbus is, do the Golden Knights have – renewed faith in Malcolm Subban, right? Like, does he now have more confidence in himself? Does the team have more confidence in him? Is Dave Pryor more confident in him and going to play him more? And my kind of snarky response is, they should have never lost it if they did.
Exactly.
Because he played in Columbus as he's played all year, and that's been very good. He just hasn't gotten any help. Like, before, earlier on in the season, not only was he not getting the goal support, but he wasn't getting any defensive help either. You saw what happened in a game where you get some defensive help, the Columbus game. Did the Golden Knights play a great game top to bottom? No. Were they really good defensively in front of Malcolm Subban? For the most part,
they're pretty solid.
There were some odd man rushes that Subban had to bail him out of, but there weren't a ton of those cross-ice tap-in type plays that you saw in the Calgary game. There weren't a ton of breakaways like you saw in the Penguins game.
Nashville game, it was, I think every goal they scored was a one-timer.
Yeah.
From side to side.
And again, it's funny because the perception is, well, Malcolm Subban played so much better in Columbus because he only allowed 1 goal, when the reality is the games against Columbus and Calgary were very, very similar. The only difference is the Golden Knights did not allow a bunch of tap-ins.
Yes.
That's it.
The defense played better.
The defense was better in Columbus than they were in Calgary, but everything else was the same.
Yeah.
The offense, the lack of offense was there. The great goaltending from Malcolm Subban was there. And it's a wasted opportunity.
Yeah. And it's so funny how the perception can change so easily in one game, because a week ago, everyone wants Subban sent to the AHL, and I'm trying to say there's no way he clears waivers. Now, after watching that game in Columbus, one game, that's it.
Yeah.
Now, how many people think Malcolm Subban clears waivers? Look around the NHL at some of the goaltending situations. There's no chance.
Well, Philly's got it all figured out.
Hart.
Carter Hart, man.
I love me some goalies, and that kid's, what, 20?
Yeah, he's a youngin'.
And he won his first game ever?
I mean, it was against Detroit.
Yeah, but still, he's 20. In a position that is like forwards when you're 20, that's young, but not that. Like goalies, like there's only been like, I think, 5 goalies in NHL history to win a game before they were 21.
Yeah, no, I'm being tongue-in-cheek. Yeah. And I think Carter Hart, I tuned in. It was probably the first Philadelphia game I've watched all season that wasn't the games they played against the Golden Knights, if I'm being honest, right? But good for the kid, good for the franchise, assuming that they don't do anything stupid when it comes to his development. And it's the rant. You really don't know what the direction of this franchise is going to be, because you've got an interim coach, You've been rumored to be in on Joel Quenneville, not in on Joel Quenneville, in on Joel Quenneville. You completely mishandled how you fired your coach and Dave Hackstall. Philadelphia, if Carter Hart proves that he's not ready right now, don't keep him up here and ruin him. Send him back down to the AHL.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a waste of a season. It really is. Like, I'm not saying you can't come back. I'm not saying you can't make waves. I still think there's plenty of talent in Philadelphia to maybe make a run, but don't do it at the expense of the long-term development of Carter Hart.
When you could have one of the top five goalies in the NHL for the next 10 years,
and
if he develops correctly.
That's what you have to keep in mind. Yes, it's great that he came in, he won his first game. If he looks like he's a pro and can be a pro and it's not going to stunt him in any way, then you keep him up and you keep playing him and you give him this ability to come into a situation where there aren't really any expectations this season. But if he shows that he cannot keep up with play at the NHL level because he's 20 years old, do the right thing by him.
Yes. It's more, yeah. The next 10 years, like, what having a goalie like that can do for a franchise, like, it keeps your Stanley Cup window open.
Yeah.
And you don't want to possibly ruin 10 years for trying to make a run in one season. Like, it's so much more important. So, yeah, I completely agree. I'm excited to see what he can do.
So are we idiots?
Why is that?
Right now, currently, there are five teams from the Pacific Division in the eight playoff spots for the Western Conference. Are we stupid?
Well, I think we are probably stupid, but I don't know if it's got anything to do with that. But I think just like everything in sports, it's going to eventually even out. And like the Ducks are going to come back to earth, right? Like, the Ducks are playing
horrible. How in the hell are they winning games?
They're playing horrible hockey and winning.
How is this team winning hockey games?
Yeah, it's amazing. They're playing awful hockey. They win in a shootout every damn night. They like, how many shootout wins does that team have? More than I think the rest of the NHL combined. like,
they have 19 wins on the year and 16 regulation and overtime wins. So they've only got three wins in a shootout.
It seems like every night
But it seems like they're always going to a shootout. Like, yes. Whether or not they win or shootout wins. So they've got three wins and two losses in the shootout.
Okay, five shootouts.
So they've played 36 games and five of them have gone to a shootout.
One out of every seven games goes to a shootout. How many shootouts do the Golden Knights have this year? Two?
Yeah, not many.
I think two.
Yeah.
Holla won it in Minnesota, and I'm trying to think.
They won a shootout against, oh shit, who was the team?
Did Vancouver beat them in a shootout?
Oh wait, yeah, they lost. Did they? No, I don't know.
Hell haven't had five shootouts.
They
haven't, I know that.
They haven't had a ton. And again, I know that I'm going to like keep harping on this because I want to keep harping on this. But Anaheim is a -9 goal differential.
Yeah, they're playing poor hockey and they're somehow winning every
game. They're 8-2 in their last 10 games.
That's insane.
It's stupid. Like, I look at Anaheim and I honestly don't understand how they are winning hockey games. Outside of John Gibson being John Gibson and just making a ton of saves above expected goals, I don't know how this team wins hockey games.
The Golden Knights do have two shootouts, by the way. I was right. They won in Minnesota and they lost to Vancouver.
So why is this a thing? Like, why is Anaheim good?
I don't know.
Why do they appear to be good? Because like I get asked this question, and every single time Anaheim comes up, I'm like, well, they're not good. Well, but they're in like tops in the division. I'm like, yeah, but they're not good.
Yeah, I think it's gonna eventually. They're eventually going to fall off. They have to.
They, in the games that we have seen them play, they look like a team that does not know how to play hockey.
Yeah, they match up really poorly with the Golden Knights. That's even dating back to last season.
Well, sure.
That's not a good matchup for them.
So, if you're looking at this right now, it's Calgary, San Jose, Anaheim, and then it's Vegas and Edmonton are the five teams in a playoff spot currently. Which team is likely to fall off in that if there are four teams going from the Pacific, what four teams are they going to be? I like Calgary. I think San Jose is probably a lock. I would be more inclined right now to believe in Edmonton than I do in Anaheim.
Yep, same. I think Anaheim's the team that doesn't make it of those five.
Why has Ken Hitchcock made Edmonton so much better?
He's made them more defensively responsible. And it's like this is what I've noticed. You go from Edmonton playing that, like, arena football, like almost like basketball, like you get a chance, then we get a chance.
Sure.
Like not playing defense at all and just having crazy breakneck speed. And McDavid's great at that, and he puts up great numbers. To what they're doing now is, let's just not let any hockey happen, which is what Hitchcock is really good at, right? Am I wrong?
No, you're absolutely right.
Hitchcock is very good at trying to have as little amount of hockey played in a hockey game as possible. And then when McDavid's on the ice, give him the puck and let him do his thing. And they literally just stand there and watch him do his thing. And it's working because now all of a sudden, last year, McDavid would have two goals and an assist.
Yeah.
But they'd lose 6-3.
Yeah.
Now, McDavid has two goals and assist, and they win 3-2 because they're shutting down the rest of the game.
Is Todd McClellan just a bad coach?
Yes. If you have the greatest player in the world and have a record that bad, you are a bad coach.
Okay, so this is the funny thing I find with the Edmonton Oilers. And you're right. Ken Hitchcock, it's the style that he has always played. That's why you get immediate results, and then it really starts to fade off because guys at some point want to actually play hockey when they're playing hockey and they're paid to play hockey. You know, but for like Milan Lucic, if you can get him to go out there and not play hockey, that's great.
He's playing Lucic a lot. I saw a great chart on The Athletic the other day showing the differences in minutes played from before Hitchcock to after Hitchcock. And Lucic has had one of the biggest demotions in minutes.
Yeah.
And in power play minutes, he's basically been completely taken off, which he was playing power play before Hitchcock.
That blows my mind.
What's going on?
That blows my mind.
They broke it down to even strength, shorthanded, and power play. And the biggest thing that jumped out to me was like, wow, he's not playing Lucic at all.
And like the greatest thing I think about Ken Hitchcock, and I love watching Ken Hitchcock talk to the media. It's just like the greatest thing ever. I don't know. Because he's got this reputation for being a complete hard ass. But he's just like that happiest, go luckiest guy when he stands up and talks to the media and never throws his players under the bus. He's very, very professional when it comes to that stuff. But if you're Ken Hitchcock, like it's super easy to figure out how to make this team better. Everyone else, play prevent defense. Connor McDavid, I'm going to play you 30 minutes a night.
And just go do your thing.
Just like Connor, zero restrictions on you.
Yeah.
You see a play, you make it happen. You want to play, like if you think you have the legs to go out there and put on a 75-second or a 90-second shift, by all means, you do what you do. I don't care. Everyone else, these are your rules. These are your responsibilities. Don't get beat and we'll win hockey games.
Yeah, essentially, like to use like a different sports metaphor, it's basically you're a boxer. You land two huge punches, then realize, I'm probably going to lose this fight, but I got two really good punches in. I'm just going to tie him up every time he gets close enough to me to punch, and you just grab him and hold him.
Yeah.
And as long as you're doing that, neither of you are scoring, and you got those two big punches in, so you're going to win the fight. The Oilers are basically, let's not let anything happen. Don't get scored on. Just play super defensive. And then when Connor McDavid gets out there, score. And he's so damn good that he just does.
And it's literally like watching two separate games in one.
It is.
It's amazing to me. And it's not going to work in the playoffs, I don't think.
Teams will be able to match up against McDavid, and they're going to make his life difficult.
Assuming they make the playoffs. And that's a big assumption, I think, on my part. But assuming they make the playoffs, I don't think that that's something that's sustainable. I don't think Ken Hitchcock's the answer long term. I think you need probably better players around Connor McDavid, right? Like, you need some guys that can be relied upon to create their own opportunities, create some scoring, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But my God, is it funny to watch. Like, it is so funny to watch an Edmonton Oilers game.
I mean, McDavid is, it looks like he's playing with people that don't belong on the ice with him.
It's the NHL level, and then it's Connor McDavid's level.
It's ridiculous. I was talking with the Oilers writer for The Athletic, Daniel Nugent-Brown, when I was in Edmonton, and It's like in beer league hockey, you've got like the B league, the C league, the A league.
Yeah,
and like every
sure.
once in a while, there's a team that's so bad in the C league, they're just getting murdered. So the league manager is like, well, these guys are paying money and they're just getting the crap knocked out of them. Let's give them an A league player.
Yeah.
To just even things out a little bit. And now you have this A league player who's playing with C league players and he's just skating circles around them. And it's almost to the point where like he intentionally doesn't score because it's too easy. So
sure.
he's skating in circles trying to set up other guys for passes. That's Connor McDavid in the fucking NHL.
No, it's so funny because man, I played, this was many moons ago, but I played on a beer league team where that was very much the case, where like every team got to have an A league player, mm-hmm. and then it was like majority B and C league players, right? But they tried to balance everything out. And then there was one game where I was playing, and I remember the other team didn't have their A league player, so it was just B and C league players, right? And they were like, the referees came over to our bench, and they're like, listen, you can't score today. And we're like, okay, what does that mean? It's like your A league guy, he can't score today. Like, he's not going to be able to put the puck in the net. If he scores, it's not going to count as
only
a goal.
Set up the other
he
guys.
Can only mm-hmm. set up guys. And like, I've played in leagues too where like your A league guys are only allowed to score 2 goals a game.
Yeah.
Like, they're not allowed to score any more than that. If they get their 2, then you have to only set up guys. And it's so funny because that's what it's like watching Connor McDavid.
Yeah. And it's not like Connor McDavid's intentionally not scoring goals, but there are times where he's on the ice and he's skating around in circles and he's so much faster than everyone else that it literally looks like he's just like waiting for someone to like, hey, can someone cut to the net so that I can feed you for an assist real quick? Like, he's so good.
And I know the game's going to be over by the time this comes out, but how excited are you to watch Matt Barzal live? Because I'll tell you what, like watching the game in Brooklyn, that kid can fly.
He was great. He was the best player on the ice in Brooklyn,
yeah,
I thought.
I'm really excited to see him live. I want to see kind of what he does away from the puck that helps him generate that speed. Because it's not he just picks it up and he's already at full flight. Like, this guy is doing a lot of the heavy lifting away from the puck, mm-hmm. so that when he gets the puck, he's really putting himself in really good spots. I cannot wait to watch him live.
Yeah, no, same. Like I said, I thought even though the Islanders didn't play particularly well as a team in that game, I thought he was the best player on the ice.
Mike Babcock had some interesting remarks on the Tampa Bay Lightning. He was asked.
I did not hear this.
Okay, so he was asked about matching up against the Lightning, and basically what he said is they're just better than everyone else.
Okay, I did hear that.
They are.
Yeah, they're amazing.
They're so incredibly good, it's scary.
And they have superstars at every level.
Yeah, they do.
You've got the Kucherov, the Stamkos, then you've got
the Yanni Hedman. The Yanni Gourdes and the Braden Points.
Yep. And then I mean just like forwards, got superstars, then you've got Hedman, superstar in defense, and then you've got the best young goalie in the NHL in Vasilevsky. They're not a top heavy team. They're not a forward heavy team. Like they have great players at every position. There is no weakness on that team other than I don't trust them in the playoffs.
Well, I hear you, and there's two reasons why I don't trust them in the playoffs. One, I think they're coach over coaches way too much. When you look at the Washington series with Tampa last year, I mean, when you put Ryan Callahan on the ice more than you put Steven Stamkos and Nikita Kucherov on the ice because you're trying to get the matchup, you're shooting yourself in the foot. Yep. You really are. And it's two, and I'm hoping that they understand and recognize this trend from last year. They overplayed Andre Vasilevsky. Yep. And they were able to get away with it through two rounds.
Only because they were outscoring teams, not because he was playing well.
But then their coach overmatches, takes his best players off the ice. All of a sudden, they're not scoring a ton of goals, and they lose because Vasilevsky is just not as sharp.
Yeah. He's, like I said, one of the best young goaltenders in the entire NHL. The Tampa Bay Lightning need him playing at his A game to win a Stanley Cup. And the only way that's going to happen is if you play him 50, 55 games. That's how many games a starting goalie
should play.
So
playing like 68 to 72 is probably not ideal.
Probably not, considering like no goalie in the history of hockey has ever done it and won a cup.
But Martin Brodeur.
Yeah. Well, okay, I shouldn't say history of hockey. I should say
the modern era.
Yeah, modern era. Yeah.
Right.
Back in, like, I think Dominik Hasek played like 87 games in an 82 game season. Like, he just went and played for
just
other
never,
teams.
Never was, like, came off the
like,
ice.
Like I do in beer league. You know, yeah. He'll just like, oh, do they need a goalie in Calgary? I'll be there.
Yeah. Like, what the? Okay, so you just brought up Calgary. They're the anti-Edmonton Oilers. Like, this team just run and gun all the time.
Yeah, they're
they
winning
don't care.
7-5 every night.
It's awesome. It's fun to watch.
Yeah, it's cool. They've got so much talent.
It's sick. Like, Johnny Hockey, Johnny Gaudreau, I feel like he's emerging as mm-hmm. the next kind of superstar in this league. And granted, he's been a superstar for a while, but I think people are really starting to take notice.
Well, you need team success. If you're
for sure.
Like, Connor McDavid had to go to the – they went to the conference final. Like,
yeah.
If he was doing this and Edmonton sucked every year, he wouldn't have near the attention. You need team success, and the Calgary has been – they're not a market that a lot of people pay attention to outside
sure.
of Calgary. They're
yep.
a smaller market. They're up in the middle of nowhere in Canada. And so people don't notice Johnny Hockey. But now that
yeah.
Calgary is
God,
in the West or whatever, people are starting to pay a little more attention to him, and they're fun.
It's all James Neal, too.
Yeah. Is he even playing?
Brendan Leipzig is an LA King, I think, right?
That was a good transition.
Trying here.
Speaking of former Golden Knights, I cannot wait for the video tribute to Lucas Pisa tonight.
He's playing, right?
Yes.
Oh, man. I am looking forward to that. I'm like my only regret is that I'm not going to be able to go into the locker room and ask Lucas Pisa a question about being a healthy scratch for the New York Islanders at times. Like, how bad are you if you're a healthy scratch for the Islanders?
Yeah, I
mean, they're not great on defense.
Yeah. Lucas Pisa is Lucas Pisa. I mean, he's a really nice guy. He's one of the smartest people I've ever talked to, and he's not super good at hockey.
Why isn't Dallas better?
Because I think they've got a bunch of guys that are good at hockey that aren't a team. Does that make sense?
No, it does, because like I've been asking myself this question for a couple of days now, because it's still really blowing my mind that there are five teams from the Pacific in a playoff spot right now, and I don't understand why Dallas isn't better than they are. And before, you could just chalk it up to shitty goaltending, right? Like, no one would argue, like, oh my God, they're so talented, they could put the puck in the net with the best of them. Yeah, 100%. But Antti Niemi is a goalie that plays a lot of minutes for them. Like, you can understand that. Right now,
Bishop's been healthy.
Bishop's been fine. He's been okay. They've got, you know, good defense and great goal scoring. Like, how are they losing hockey games?
I think it's guys that are really, really talented at hockey.
Yeah.
But they're not, I just feel like, I don't know. I don't want to like make these guys sound like selfish, like lazy, whatever, because I don't know these guys. But it just feels like they're not a team. It just feels like they're not in it together to win games. It feels like I'm Tyler Seguin. I'm going to go get me mine tonight. Does that make sense? Like, and
No, it does. But the thing that I found interesting, and this is just from like kind of paying attention to Twitter during the game, right? So when Dallas came here to play, a couple of their beat writers kept talking about how the lines were juggled constantly throughout the game. Is it that there are a bunch of guys that are really good at hockey, but they don't know how to play together because their coach can't decide on a lineup that he wants to go with and it continues to juggle lines?
Yeah.
That's a question.
I don't know, because I don't follow the team close enough.
And I don't either, but I'm trying to figure out exactly why they can't win hockey games. I don't understand it.
When you've got Sagan and Ben and Radulov, and like they've got way more talent than their record shows.
I know,
and
you're.
It's been this same story for like 3 or 4 years.
Yeah,
now.
But again, like you can chalk it up to goaltending for two of those 4 years. Now it's just like, what's the excuse?
Yeah.
If Dallas could ever get a goalie, man. If Dallas could ever get a goalie, they got a goalie that was able to go to a Stanley Cup final in Ben Bishop.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, they should be better than they are, but they're not. Last thing, and this is just something that I'm curious about. Is there a line in hockey better than Rantanen, MacKinnon, and Landeskog?
Ooh, they are fun to watch.
Good Lord.
They're, look, the way professional sports are designed, this is every sport, is if you suck, you get good picks, and you're supposed to use those good picks to get good young players and then eventually be really good.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to be a cycle so that all fan bases get wins and it keeps so that you're not you don't have the same shitty team every year that
sure.
you have to reach.
Yeah.
The problem is, most times, if a team sucks, it's because their evaluators suck, and then when they get those good picks, they waste them.
Mm-hmm.
The Colorado Avalanche is a perfect example of the way professional sports is supposed to work. They sucked for 10 years. Maybe not 10, but they sucked
for a
eight,
while.
Yeah, seven, 8 years. And in that time that they sucked, they got Paul Stastny. Didn't end up working out, but good player.
Yeah.
They drafted Duchesne,
mm-hmm.
good player, didn't end up working out. But now they've got this this crop of...
Got a good return for
McKinnon,
Matt Duchesne.
Yeah, McKinnon, Rantanen, and Landeskog, all guys that they got because they had those high picks, and now they're all turning the corner. They're all old enough to finally be like in their prime as a player. They were young, up-and-coming guys that weren't ready to win. Now they're ready to win, and they've got all these dangerous pieces. This is how professional sports are supposed to work, and it's awesome to see a team build through the draft and do it the right way. It's awesome.
It's very similar to Toronto
yes.
and what's going on there. And the only issue at some point is it's great to have these young guys that are ready to lead you, but you got to pay them at some point.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not too concerned about it with Colorado because when you look at that team and you look at that lineup, they've got those three guys and scoring pretty much falls off a cliff. So they don't have like the really good second or third line players that you overpay a little bit to keep and have
the William
special.
Nylanders.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing, right? Like how good can Colorado truly be in the playoffs if you're relying so heavily on this one line? I would love to see them do some damage because I think that they'd be fun and interesting and it's just a new storyline.
Mm-hmm.
But I do have reservations. I do have concerns if they end up matching up against a Nashville or a Winnipeg who is significantly deeper and still has that high-end talent.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where they are going to fall when it comes to that production. Because if Winnipeg, like if you tell Dustin Byfuglien to go out there and all he's got to do is shut down that line, I mean, you're pretty much going to shut down that line.
Yeah. And even if it's, you just put your top line out there with Line A and Shifley, and it's like, okay, that cancels out because
they're both
spectacular. So because those two lines cancel out, now it's, okay, where's the matchup with the other three lines? And it's extremely lopsided
very difficult,
for Winnipeg. Yeah. I mean, Colorado's fun, and they've got Varlamov, as old as he is still playing really well for him. He's had one of the better seasons of all the goalies in the league. Nobody's really talking about him. They don't have great defense, but they score so many goals, and they have, like, that team is fun to watch.
So we're going to end it here, but I'm going to bitch at you for a minute because you were late. You selfish, selfish athletic writer, Jesse Granger, never says no to a story. And because of that, this podcast almost didn't happen.
Yeah, I was late to getting over to the studio today, but I told Ryan, I texted him, I'm like, hey, I'm running like a few minutes late, but I have a great reason. And that great reason is I was interviewing Wayne Gretzky.
I never heard of him.
Yeah, just some guy.
Some guy named Wayne.
Yeah. For a really, really cool story. Maybe my favorite story I've ever written.
It's the greatest hockey player that ever lived. If it's not your favorite story that you've ever written, I think you're writing it wrong.
Yeah, I'm also getting a bunch of other guys for this story, too.
Did you make sure to ask the questions right?
I did ask the questions right.
So you got the right answers?
I did get the right answers.
Okay, great.
From the great one. Look for this is like a longer term story, so we're talking around January 1st.
Okay.
For this story. So look for it. I mean, I'm going to tweet it out, like I'm going to tease it on Twitter and everything, but look for the story with Wayne Gretzky. It's Vegas based. This is not a story about Wayne Gretzky. This is a story about Las Vegas, and I'm using Wayne Gretzky in the story, so it's going to be fun.
What was it like to get the call from Wayne Gretzky? Like just As a guy that is a fan of hockey, that's covered hockey, right? Like, I imagine it's got to be like, holy shit, I've made it, right?
It's pretty, yeah. Like, it was funny because he calls me and I'm like, hello? He's like, hey, it's Wayne. I'm like, oh, Wayne Gretzky. Wayne, that Wayne.
The Wayne. The only like, oh. Wayne? Oh, okay. Yeah, I got it.
Like, hey, how's it going? He's like, I'm good. How are you? I'm like,
that's fantastic.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
I assume that while you talked to Wayne, you said, hey, I do this awesome podcast. We'd love to have you on. You booked him, right?
I did not mention that. I was just stoked that I was able to get him on the phone. Wayne Gretzky, believe it or not the easiest guy to get an interview with.
I can imagine. Now, I have talked to Wayne Gretzky. I have interviewed Wayne Gretzky. It's always been
on red carpets and stuff.
Yeah. So it's always one of those like, yeah, sure. And then you ask him two questions, and then he's like, I'm going down the line.
Yeah, I've got 100 people to talk to down this
exactly,
red carpet.
Exactly. But that was definitely the first time it happened. It was an oh shit moment for sure. I was like, you're Wayne Gretzky. I'm not sure if you know this, but you are Wayne Gretzky. You know what I mean? Come a long way since then. But that's cool.
Yeah.
So you're writing a story, and Wayne Gretzky's a part of it.
Yep.
And you're going to get him on the podcast. It's great.
I am not getting him on the podcast.
You are going to work on that.
I will try.
You have his number now.
I do have his number saved
on
my phone.
So, see, that's the point.
Having Wayne Gretzky on my contacts list is kind of cool.
Okay, hold on. Because I got to ask you this question, because I think this is vitally, vitally important. So Wayne Gretzky calls you, and you answer, and you talk to Wayne, and you interview him for this story. Did you immediately put your phone down, go to the number, hit the information, and then add it to your contacts?
That's exactly how it happened. Literally the second the phone call ended, I saved Wayne
Gretzky. What is it saved? Is it saved as Wayne Gretzky?
Wayne Gretzky.
The best that ever was?
I need to put, you know what, I'm going to do it right now while we're on the podcast. I am going to put the goat emoji.
You're
going to
put the goat. Okay, so your goal right now, and I'm watching Jesse Granger as he does this. Right now, your goal, Jesse, for this podcast is to get Wayne Gretzky.
It's not going to happen.
It might happen.
All right.
It might happen.
He now has a goat.
I see that. Jesse has Wayne. I'm going to need that number at some point. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to come on the podcast, but
you could try.
That story is going to be fantastic, so make sure you subscribe to The Athletic.
Have you learned nothing from Wayne Gretzky? You miss 100% of the shots you don't take. Take the shot, man.
You want to know what's funny? When I got the phone call from Wayne Gretzky, I'm sitting at a pizza place with Ken from Sinbin. Pyology? Is that what it's called?
Oh, yeah, maybe.
Whatever. It's over in downtown Summerlin. It's right
by
probably.
The practice
facility. Yep. And they have a wall of quotes. And we're standing in line. No. We're standing in line. And they have the Wayne Gretzky quote, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take.
Yeah.
And like we were laughing about it. I was like, because his quote is like right beneath like Albert Einstein's quote and right above like Teddy Roosevelt. I'm like,
two of the greatest thinkers.
I'm like, it feels like Wayne Gretzky doesn't fit in on this particular quote wall. And then 15 minutes later, I'm sitting there eating and he calls me. So
that
was pretty cool. It was pretty cool.
Did you tell him that you were eating lunch beneath his quote?
I did not.
All right. Well, you miss 100% of the shots that you don't take, Jesse. So you should take the shot and try to get Wayne Gretzky on this podcast. That's going to do it for us this week. Look out for Jesse's story. For all of his stories, go to The Athletic. It's a great subscription. If you aren't subscribed for The Athletic, what are you doing? Be smart.
Yeah, the day this podcast comes out, tomorrow, I'll have a story on The Athletic. I have not every player, but pretty much every player on the entire Golden Knights, what their individual goal song would be if they had individual goal songs.
That's awesome.
So
I'm excited for that.
So Wyshynski at ESPN did a story where he said like he picked like the top 10 goal songs for individual players if they were allowed to do that. And he said like Mozart for Crosby because he's a child prodigy and he does everything perfectly, but everyone still hates classical music, so everyone hates Crosby, so it's like
that makes perfect sense.
So he did that for like the top 10 players, so that gave me the idea like, okay, I'm going to ask every player on the Golden Knights. So I didn't get all of them. Because sometimes the guys aren't in the locker room and a couple of them are hurt. But I got everyone's, including Marc-Andre Fleury, who tries his damnedest to get a goal. And he wants one bad. So I even have his. I have, like, William Karlsson's is fantastic. I'm not going to give away any of them on here.
Okay. All right.
But some really good stuff. Individual goal songs, if they were allowed to pick a song to play when they score.
I will be reading that. By the way, I just want to ask this question because you brought up Wyshynski. You're not the new co-host for Puck Soup, are you?
No.
Okay, good. So we'll be able to continue to do these podcasts. Great. Give him a follow at @JesseGranger_ on Twitter. Subscribe to The Athletic. Join The Athletic. Read Jesse's stuff at The Athletic. And then read all the other hockey coverage at The Athletic, because it really is a wealth of knowledge and resources. You can follow me at Ryan Hockey Guy on Twitter. You can hear me every day, Monday through Friday, from 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. on the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show with Frank Harnish and, again, me, Ryan the Hockey Guy, on Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM. Also pregame, intermission, and postgame. We got one tonight, and we will try to get in the studio next week for another podcast, potentially before the end of the new year. Thanks for listening.